This is an ABC podcast.
This is Pacific Beach on ABC Radio Australia. Today, is Australia's so-called Pacific Step Up at risk of taking a step backwards after more fallout from last week's leaders' forum? Well, the Prime Ministers of Fiji and Tuvalu appear to be suggesting that is the case. Also coming up, they were in the minority at what is still largely a male-dominated event, but the only female leaders to attend last week's Pacific Islands Forum meeting have joined forces and calling for collective action on family violence.
Women's representation is just one of the issues facing women in the Pacific, and we don't want that to be the beginning or the end, particularly when issues like family violence is so dominant as well.
I think the partnership with the PIF and with New Zealand, I think we can only move forward from here.
We'll have more on those stories from the Pacific Islands Forum, looking at the wrap-up coming up later in the program. But first, to a developing story now, and a helicopter rescue mission will resume in a remote part of Papua New Guinea this morning to help a large group of people who've been lost for more than 10 days, with at least three of them reportedly dying as they waited for help. Now, around 30 people were travelling to a religious celebration in the province of Morobe when they became lost in mountainous terrain with limited food and no shelter. Jürgen Ruh is a helicopter pilot. He evacuated 8 of the people yesterday and is going to be back in the air again today to drop off food supplies and try to help those who remain on the mountain. Now, our reporter Evan Wasuka has spoken with Jürgen Ruh this morning, and Evan joins me now with the latest on this story. Evan, this is certainly a tragic result to what was meant to be a celebration.
That's right. There's a big celebration in the town of Kaboom. It's pretty remote and there are no real roads to the area. They'll be marking the 100 years of the arrival of German missionaries in the area, which of course has had quite a significant impact on the region. In fact, the Prime Minister, James Marape, will be there for the event. Now, because of this major event, church groups have been traveling and walking to get to the celebrations from their village. But to get there, they have to travel through mountainous terrain, and some, unfortunately, have gotten lost along the way. Now, it's a pretty tough terrain, high elevation, very cold temperature, and some of those in the group have either underestimated the travel time or the conditions with limited food and no shelter. 8 people were evacuated yesterday by helicopter.
All right. So what's happening now to those who've been remain stranded in that mountainous terrain?
Well, first, the information about the plight of those on the mountain only came out when the first of the group actually made it off the mountain. Now, an earlier flight during the week by helicopter wasn't possible because of bad weather. And just yesterday, the story was shared in social media. Food supplies were brought to those on the mountain along with clothes. That's been organized by the public. The body of a pastor was airlifted out of the mountain over the weekend, and 3 people have reportedly died. There's at least 11 unaccounted for. Jürgen Ruh is a helicopter pilot in Leh, and he's been the one flying in supplies to those on the mountain.
So yesterday, second flight again, I bought more food, I bought some canteen and whatever I could grab, and then we treated 8 people. And this morning again, we're going to bring more food in, and hopefully can retrieve the rest. And once we've got all the living retrieved, then we'll try and gain strength and replan and try and look for the people who have died. So in that second area, 3 people are confirmed dead, but also 11 people are unaccounted for. So the figure of how many are deceased is unknown.
Well, that's the pilot, Jürgen Ruh there. Evan, this incident, obviously, it appears to be a reminder of just how a remote PNG can be and how difficult some of the terrain can be.
Yes, it is, Catherine. It really shows what people have to do to travel around the remote parts of Papua New Guinea. It's really unfortunate how this celebration has been marred by this death. And it's still not yet over yet with Jürgen Ruh heading out this morning to help those still out there. But this operation is still far from over yet. And other factors like the weather and terrain also come into play. This is Mr. Ruh speaking about his plans for later this morning.
Due to altitude and the fact that we are doing an out-of-ground hover departure, so we have to go vertical up amongst the trees. We can only lift 3 people at a time. So it would be a few ferry flights forth and back. And those mountain ranges, they can be clouded in for days. And normally, they're only open for a few hours in the morning. So every time we go in, we bring more and more food and blankets in. And we try and take as many people out as we can. So the chance of survival for the remaining people is greater and greater.
Jürgen Roux, he's the helicopter pilot who was really leading this rescue mission there in Papua New Guinea. Of course, that is an unfolding story. We'll keep bringing you updates here on ABC Radio Australia. Well, Australia's much-vaunted Pacific step-up is in disarray following last week's meeting with regional leaders, particularly because of the issue of climate change. And now inflammatory comments by the country's deputy prime minister have also further incensed some of the island countries. Fiji's Prime Minister Frank Bainimarama has described his Australian counterpart Scott Morrison's approach during last week's Pacific Forum as very insulting and condescending. Now, a watered-down agreement ended the marathon talks at the meeting held in Tuvalu, where the smaller Pacific nations had been pushing for a phase-out of coal in the power sector, but Australia resisted that. That, of course, left people disappointed, like Frank Bainimarama from Fiji. Here he is speaking in Tuvalu at the end of the forum.
I was gravely disappointed that the language coming out of our final communique and that Australia fails to recognise climate change for what it is, a global crisis. I, along with my fellow Pacific heads of government, will continue to push the region's largest carbon emitter to transition from coal to clean energy and continue to be a voice for all climate vulnerable peoples.
Well, now relations have been further strained after the Australian Deputy Prime Minister Michael McCormack claimed that Pacific Islanders will cope with rising seawaters because they'll come to Australia to do seasonal work. Well, that motivated Frank Bainimarama to hit back. He tweeted at the weekend that the relationship between Australia and the Pacific had taken, quote, a big step backwards. Our reporter Jordan Fennell's following the story. Jordan, what exactly were these comments from Michael McCormack, the Deputy Prime Minister?
Well, Catherine, the comments were recorded on a phone and first reported by The Guardian Australia, who released footage of Michael McCormack at a business function in Wagga Wagga, where he reportedly said that people from Pacific nations will, quote, continue to survive because many of their workers come here and pick our fruit. He was responding to a statement from an audience member who told him that Prime Minister Scott Morrison's position at the Pacific Islands Forum had made her embarrassed. While at the Pacific Islands Forum, Australia didn't agree to the Tuvalu Declaration, which called for a rapid phase out of coal use. Here's some more of what Mr. McCormack had to say.
I also get a little bit annoyed when we have people in those sorts of countries who point the finger at Australia and say we should be shutting down all our resources sector so that they can continue to survive. They will continue to survive. There's no question they will continue to survive, and they'll continue to survive with large aid assistance from Australia.
Frank Bainimarama hit back on Twitter where he said, quote, if this is the Australian government's idea of a step up in its relations with the Pacific, it's certainly not a step forward. It's a big step backwards. He was referring there to Australia's recent efforts to re-engage with the Pacific with what Prime Minister Scott Morrison has called the Pacific Step Up. There's also been a lot of backlash on social media from Pacific Islanders, with many expressing their disgust at Mr. McCormack's comments.
So what does this likely mean for the relationship between Australia and Fiji and other Pacific nations moving forward?
Well, those comments plus Australia's refusal to endorse the Tuvalu Declaration at the Pacific Islands Forum seems to have left the relationship on rocky ground. Mr. Bainimarama told The Guardian Australia that he thought Prime Minister Scott Morrison's approach during the leaders' retreat was, quote, very insulting and condescending. The Shadow Minister for the Pacific, Pat Conroy, told AM that this would have diplomatic consequences and could lead to the Pacific nations seeking support from other countries. Here's a little bit of what he had to say.
It can only make them more predisposed towards China, and that is bad strategically for Australia, and it will lead to potentially some very dire repercussions down the road.
The Australian opposition spokesman for the Pacific, Pat Conroy, Jordan Fennell, our reporter there. Well, while climate change attracted most of the leaders' attention and also the media's at last week's Pacific Islands Forum, there were, of course, other issues that were discussed, among them family violence, and we're going to have more on that shortly. But the region's prime ministers and presidents also discussed the Indonesian provinces of Papua and West Papua. Now, despite differences of opinion in the past, the forum's final communique included a strong call for Jakarta to take action to address the leaders' concern about ongoing human rights violation, as Liam Fox reports.
West Papua has been a constant agenda item at the 18-member Pacific Islands Forum in recent years. The differing views of leaders, though, and their relationship with Indonesia has meant the language expressed in the end-of-forum communiques has been muted. Not so this year. The communique out of Tuvalu strongly encouraged Indonesia to finalise the timing of a visit by the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights to allow for a report on the situation to be ready before next year's Pacific Islands Forum. The leaders acknowledged the reported escalation in violence and continued allegations of human rights abuses in West Papua and agreed to re-emphasise and reinforce the forum's position of raising its concerns over the violence. It's a marked difference from last year's communique. In 2018, the West Papuan issue constituted a single sentence where leaders recognised the constructive engagement by forum countries with Indonesia with respect to elections and human rights in West Papua and to continue dialogue in an open and constructive manner.
We welcome the outcome of the communique in terms of the language that has come out of this communique is a strong push by the leaders, in particular calling on the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. That's a big step.
Ronnie Kareni is the Pacific representative of the ULMWP, the United Liberation Movement for West Papua. Members of the ULMWP, including its prominent chair, Benny Wenda, were in Tuvalu as part of Vanuatu's official delegation. It was a move that angered Indonesia, as did the inclusion once again of West Papua on the forum's agenda. Indonesia maintains other countries should not interfere in its internal affairs. Vanuatu has traditionally been a vocal supporter of the West Papuan independence movement, as has Solomon Islands. This year, though, leaders from other countries expressed strong concerns at reports of ongoing human rights abuses by Indonesian security forces. At a session with civil society organisations, Tonga's Prime Minister, Akilisi Pohiva, made an emotional plea. We should not let others control us. We should stand together in support of the people of West Papua, he said. Samoa's Prime Minister, Tuilaepa Sailele, said people are suffering and we need to revisit our positions. We need to address this issue with courage. Mr. Kareni says the support from the Polynesian leaders was an important part in securing the strongest statement in the final communique.
Especially with the Tongan Prime Minister, his statement changed the mood in the dialogue session with the CSOs, and that really galvanised support.
It wasn't all celebrations for the West Papuans and their supporters, though. Last Thursday, the day the forum leaders met in their retreat, demonstrations were held in West Papua and other Indonesian provinces to coincide with their meeting. West Papuan sources say more than 100 people were arrested and detained across 3 protest sites in Jayapura. Pacific Beat sought comment from the Indonesian embassy in Canberra.
That is Liam Fox reporting there. Well, the only female leaders who attended the Pacific Islands Forum meeting were New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern and the Marshall Islands President Hilda Heine. And they joined forces to call for collective action on family violence. Now, the two women, along with the Forum's Secretary General, Dame Meg Taylor, are warning that words and policy positions don't just translate into change, as Richard Hewitt reports.
Women barely rate a mention in this year's final communique from the Pacific Islands Forum, and they remain massively underrepresented in regional politics. But New Zealand's leader, Jacinda Ardern, says that is just one symptom of a much wider problem.
There isn't a great number of women in leadership in the Pacific. In our parliaments, they represent 8%, whereas over 20% if you look globally. We know there's work there to do, but it's not the only work. Women's representation is just one of the issues facing women in the Pacific, and we don't want that to be the beginning or the end, particularly when issues like family violence is so dominant as well.
As the only other woman at the leaders' retreat, Marshall Islands President Hilda Heine says it's good to have Ms. Ardern speaking out.
One of the main challenges is having adequate resources to bring to bear on some of these issues. So having the Prime Minister putting a spotlight on this issue is critical and significant, at least for the Marshall Islands. I know that we've been struggling to work on a lot of these issues. Domestic violence for women, economic empowerment, participation in government, these are all issues that are dear to us and we've been working at it for many years. And I think the partnership with the PIF and with New Zealand, I think we can only move forward from here.
The Pacific Islands Forum's Secretary General, Dame Meg Taylor, says that women have a vital role to play in regional growth, a point which has been included in the leaders' communique.
This is very important for us to build on, as we develop the strategy for the future. What is the component on women going to be so that they have a greater role in the development of this region?
The reference to which Dame Meg refers talks about ensuring increased representation at all levels, but that's the only direct reference to women in the entire document, and there's no mention of family violence. And indeed, it's understood that one of the male leaders, the president of Kiribati, claimed that his country no longer has a problem with domestic violence, much to the surprise of Jacinda Ardern.
I can't speak, and nor should I speak to any specific country's record, but I can speak to New Zealand's. And we very openly acknowledge that we have a significant issue with family violence. And, you know, I think as a whole, by and large, if you talk to those who work in the region and civil society, they'll say that our region as a whole has an issue that needs to be brought out into the daylight, needs to be challenged and needs to be invested in.
And Dame Meg Taylor says that region-wide problem is expensive because of the way it impacts on the lives of women and their children.
Melanesia talks about it and in many instances does try to resolve this. I know in Papua New Guinea there has been a lot done through national government. After the declaration of the leaders in 2015, I believe it was, a greater emphasis on this. I think there are some of our countries that really need to be much more vocal about what is happening. Civil society, when they met the economic ministers, asked for a study on the economic impact of violence against women. And that may be a trigger that might get some of the leaders to understand that this is a cost to you if you just keep this going.
That is Dame Meg Taylor. She's the Secretary General of the Pacific Islands Forum, was there in Tuvalu, of course, last week. The reporter there for us, Richard Hewitt.
Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia.
Well, there's some good news on the future of coral reefs. More than 80 scientists from around the world have surveyed reefs across 44 countries in the Pacific and Indian Oceans and have found that most of them have at least some functioning coral communities. Now, as Bill Bainbridge reports, that means if the right strategies are followed, reefs that support the lives and the livelihoods of nearly a billion people can at least be partially protected.
The study, published in Nature Ecology and Evolution, is the largest of its kind ever conducted. It represents thousands of hours of scientists diving on and observing 2,500 reefs. Emily Darling is the lead author of the study and a Wildlife Conservation Society scientist.
Well, we found something really new, that 22 countries have functioning coral reefs. So these are coral reefs that still have the species that can build the backbone of the whole reef ecosystem. So these are corals that build large branching and plating or massive corals that really build coral reefs as we know them.
That's the good news. But the bad news is that only a minority of the reefs studied met the study's minimum benchmark of having 10% coral coverage. Joshua Sinner from James Cook University is one of the 80 scientists who contributed to the study.
Unfortunately, over a quarter of the reefs that we looked at were in quite a dismal state of less than 10% coral cover. And remember, this was before the most recent global bleaching event. And that bleaching event affected a very large number of reefs. Only 17% of the reefs we studied met that minimum benchmark and were not cooked by the marine heat wave.
And he says that threat is increasing.
So it's not a matter of if we get another event, it's simply a matter of when. Global coral bleaching events have become more and more frequent, and the sort of recovery window has been getting less and less. So we will get another global bleaching event. And I think the important thing to keep in mind is the places that didn't get cooked in this bleaching event doesn't mean they won't next time.
But Emily Darling says researchers found some reefs are protected by unique local conditions.
So a lot of the times we think that climate change is this blanket impact. And in many ways it is. Our oceans and our planet are warming, and they're warming exceptionally rapidly. It's really scary. But there's also local oceanographic features. So local features of a reef, of an ocean, of a coastline that changes the local ocean conditions that a coral experiences. So a reef that is closer to a very deep canyon or where there's strong tides that push water across a reef that can bring colder water up and help cool off a reef. that can contribute to a coral being able to survive a bleaching event.
That natural protection for some reefs could help preserve coral species and help keep other threatened reefs alive as part of what the scientists hope will be an international network of protected and functioning coral reefs. The study proposes three strategies to protect reefs in the future: preserving the functioning reefs, promoting recovery for the reefs impacted by the 2014-17 coral bleaching event, and finally, transforming some coastal societies away from dependence on reefs that are no longer functioning. But Joshua Sinner says that hope will only remain if the world is able to address rising sea temperatures caused by climate change.
The main driver of bad conditions on coral reefs is climate change. We do look at a range of other social and economic drivers, and they do have impact. But what really needs to happen, and I think people in the Pacific will appreciate this as well, is a reduction in carbon emissions.
That is Professor Joshua Sinner. He's from the James Cook University in the state of Queensland. Bill Bainbridge reporting there. Well, the Fijian-born weightlifter Eileen Thikamatana keeps on raising the bar. She broke three world records over the weekend, and it's a big loss to Fiji because she's inching closer to becoming an Australian and possibly could wear the green and gold at next year's Olympics in Japan. A dispute with the Fiji weightlifting body saw the Commonwealth gold medalist move to Australia. She's now an Australian permanent resident and in the process of applying for citizenship here so that she can compete on the world stage. Our reporter Gemma Piali went to see her record-breaking performance at the Australian National Junior Weightlifting Championships in Sydney at the weekend.
155 kilos, third final attempt for Eileen Thikamatana.
At just 19 years of age, Eileen Thikamatana has been described as one of the greatest athletes in the sport of weightlifting. Competing in the weight category of 87 kilograms at the Australian Junior Championships in Sydney, she managed to smash 46 records in just the one day. That includes three world records, two for her clean and jerk lifts and one for her overall total of 269 kilograms. But Thikamatana isn't stopping here.
I feel very happy. And since all my hard work paid off, only in the clean and jerk, it was good, but in the snatches I could have done it, but so I've got some few mistakes to work on, so I'll definitely work on that in the next training sessions.
The president of the Australian Weightlifting Federation, Sam Coffer, has described Thikamatana's previous performances as simply sensational, and this performance was no different.
I think everyone in the audience was like me. I think we had, some of us had tears in our eyes because we don't see these sorts of performances every day of the week, particularly in a sport of weightlifting where it's such a strength sport.
As a permanent resident, Thikamatana can claim the Australian records she broke, but she can't officially claim the Oceania, Commonwealth and World records until she receives her Australian citizenship. And it's still unclear when she'll receive her blue passport. She also has to wait until she can represent Australia on the world stage, making it a challenge to be able to qualify for next year's Tokyo Olympics. Her coach, Paul Coffer, says while the situation is unfair, he's looking forward to seeing Thikamatana break future world records.
She's missed two world senior championships. I suppose it's unfair, it's wrong what is happening to this young girl. But anyone would have packed her in. But she didn't. She just goes on better than ever. And what she says is, I have time. The whole world is in front of her. Nothing will stop her. And she is one of the greatest I've ever coached in 53 years.
Last year at the Commonwealth Games on the Gold Coast, Thikamatana won gold for Fiji. But when she competes at the next Games or even the Olympics, she'll be accepting her award under the Australian flag. And she's not dwelling on the disagreements she had with Weightlifting Fiji in the past.
Gave them a gold medal at the Commonwealth Games, yeah. Things happen, it happened, and we can't turn back time. So I'm looking towards my future and what's good for my future.
The young athlete will be celebrating her 20th birthday next month. And according to those in the weightlifting community, she has a bright future ahead in the sport.
In my opinion, one of the greatest athletes today in Australia.
And that's the way to finish your weightlifting competition.
founder of the Australian National Junior Weightlifting Championships, which were in Sydney at the weekend, and certainly sounds like the Fijian-born weightlifter Eileen Thikamitana was one of the stars there. Our reporter Gemma Piali went along for us. That is all for Pacific Beat this morning. Thanks so much for your company. You have a great day.